You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this Monday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. And today is a very special episode because we're going to start off with a very special guest. It's kept under wraps for a long time, but today's first segment, we get to start off with a nice interview that I got to have with Trevor Booker, who played for the Pacers last year. So stay tuned for that. We'll have a nice 15-minute chat with Trevor Booker about the team last year, that playoff series against the Cavs, what he's up to now, what he thought of Victor Oladipo, what he thought of joining a team with a bunch of chemistry. It'll be really cool to hear from him. You'll love everything that he had to say. And then when that's over, I'll talk about the games from the weekend against the Hornets and the Mavs. So first up, here's an interview and a fun segment with Trevor Booker, and then we'll transition to this weekend's games. All right, everyone. I'm now joined by former Pacer and most recently playing for the Indiana Pacers, Trevor Booker. Trevor, how are you doing, man? It feels like we haven't heard your name in a long time.
Yeah, I'm good. Just at home rehabbing right now.
Yeah, so talk about that injury, because I know you were going to go to China, I believe, but I don't know where your basketball career currently has you with the injury and the rehab and, you know, 10-day contract season just opened up.
Yeah, I signed in China this season. I went over there, got injured, had a turf toe injury, so I had to come home. It required surgery. I had surgery over 2 months ago, so now I'm just rehabbing and currently, you know, getting stronger every day. I just started back running last week, so it's progressing well.
That's good. That's exciting. Hopefully there's another opportunity for you in the same way there was last year late in the season, which is kind of where I want to start with you. It was kind of a pretty crazy 2017-18 season for you. You got traded, you got waived, and then you still ended up playing in the postseason. You know, what's it like kind of starting on Brooklyn and then getting traded and waived by the same team that traded for you? That has to be kind of mentally draining almost.
It was something different for me. Last year, it was my first time, you know, ever getting traded in it. Since I have been in the NBA, so it was definitely something new, but at the same time, I understood, you know, it was business, you know, so I didn't take it personal, and, you know, the Philly situation, it just didn't work out for me, for whatever reason, but I got to, you know, go to Indiana, and, you know, play with a great group of guys, and, you know, I love my experience there, and, you know, we had a good postseason run, gave the Cavs 7 games, you know, we'll play well.
Yeah, I'm glad you talked about that. That's where, obviously, we're going to jump next because this is a Pacers podcast. When you got cut, you chose Indiana. I know there was some talk about you liking the culture and the fit there. Did you have a lot of teams after you at that point after you did get cut by Philly? And if so, you know, why did you end up choosing Indiana over all that? Was it because of the culture and fit and the playing time, or were they the only suitor that really came your way that you liked?
Yeah, I had several teams, you know, inquire about me, but I chose Indiana because I liked their culture. You know, that was a team that I was watching, you know, the whole season. They were playing well. They had a lot of guys, you know, with no big egos on the team, and that's something I like. So I chose Indiana, you know, and, you know, I love my choice.
Yeah, it has to be awesome to have something work out well like that. And I'm glad you talked about culture too, because, you know, everyone was talking all season about the good chemistry in Indiana and that culture that you just talked about. You were in the NBA for a pretty long while between, you know, Washington and everywhere you were. Had you ever been on a team as tight and, you know, that had as much chemistry as last year's Pacers?
Maybe one other team, maybe my Utah squad. And maybe one of the years I was in, well, two of the years I was in Brooklyn, a year and a half, two of those squads, even though we weren't winning as much as we would like, we were pretty close. But, you know, Indiana, they have, you know, young guys mixed with, you know, some good veteran leadership in Thad and Bogey, and the chemistry is just great. And I think that's what you need, you know, to win in the NBA.
Is it hard to join in a team that's already tight like that to fit in, or did they embrace you pretty well when you hopped in there?
you know, usually it'll be, you know, kind of tough. You know, but with the guys that we had, they made it, you know, super easy. You know, they helped me learn the plays. They brought me right in. You know, I just fit right in when I got there, and they made it super easy for me.
That's good. It felt like such a fun little group for that last month when you were there. As you guys were, you know, coming down the home stretch, coming up for the playoffs, you're fighting for what could have been a top four seed. All of a sudden, you shake out to fifth, and you learn you're going to be playing LeBron. Is it deflating at all to get that feeling that you play really well for a month, and then you just have to go up against LeBron?
For some teams, it may be, you know, but we were excited. We saw a great opportunity there, and we were a team that, you know, we weren't scared of anybody. We were playing well, and we were confident, you know, no matter, you know, who we were playing. If we had to play Golden State Warriors the first round, you know, we would have been just as confident, you know. And I think it showed, you know, we took them seven games, and, you know, not once did we back down.
What was that series like, just you guys exceeding so many expectations? You know, I think everybody kind of thought the Cavs were just going to run over you guys, and, you know, to compete with LeBron and that team that made it to the finals and push them to seven games, I don't think anybody expected you guys to do that. Did it feel surreal at the time, or was it just one day at a time, we can do this kind of thing?
Yeah, we just took it one day at a time. Like you said, not too many people, you know, predicted us to win. You know, if you had a look on, you know, ESPN or wherever else, other sports shows, they were making a joke about it. One guy said, you know, we would lose a series in three games. You know, and stuff like that, you know, it really makes me mad because, you know, that shows you they honestly don't know what they're talking about. They're on the outside looking in. So it's hard to take that stuff to heart, but that's stuff that I do take to heart. But we just took it one day at a time and tried to, you know, go out there, play our game, and show everybody that we were for real.
Yeah, and then it ends up being so close. Do you guys have, you know, you guys looked back on that series. Did you guys as a team feel like something went wrong that you could have rectified to have won the series? Or do you look back with no regrets, or do you just feel like LeBron was too good down the stretch of some of those games?
Yeah, definitely no regrets, you know, looking back on it. I think we played some good basketball. They had the best player in the world in LeBron James. You know, he's a tough player. He's been to, I don't know, 8 straight finals. You know, it's tough getting through that. But, you know, we definitely came close.
Yeah, it has to be awesome at least to be a part of almost upsetting LeBron in that first round. Everybody, and including me now, wants to talk about Victor Oladipo and the season he had last year and now bleeding into this year. This year he's seeing different coverages, kind of. The teams are forcing the ball out of his hands and making him pass more. But last year he was so special with all the clutch moments, the exciting getting to the rim and beating everybody and just having a new gear that he hadn't had in his NBA career before. Have you ever seen a guy improve like that? And what was it like being a part of on a team with a guy like that?
Yeah, I think in Victor's case, you know, he's always been that special. You know, it just, you know, get it to showcase it. You just have to find the right team, you know. But he's such a hard worker that it didn't surprise me at all. You know, I didn't know him before I came to Indiana, you know, but as soon as I got there, you know, I saw his energy, I saw his work ethic. And, you know, it didn't surprise me that he improved as much as he did, because he's always, you know, the first one in the gym, the one with the most energy. He comes in singing, which I got tired of. but you know, he didn't surprise me at all. He's just a great overall guy, and you know that's why he's leading this team to success.
Kyle Quinn told me that this summer, after he joined the team, Oladipo would call him and just be singing. Did that ever happen to you?
Nah, that never happened to me, but, you know, you would know when he's coming, you know, in the building, you would hear him before you see him.
I felt that a few times being around the team. I want to talk about a guy you replaced in the rotation, TJ Leaf. I think it's hard for fans and even people who are around basketball a lot to assess rookies and, like, where they're at in their career, just because, you know, it's hard to understand the gap between high school plus to college to the NBA in 3 years like that. What did you think of TJ Leaf when you were around the team? Do you think it's taking him a while to acclimate to the NBA, or is he just, you know, he didn't have the opportunity he needed last year?
You know, I think, you know, first of all, I want to say TJ is one of the first ones to embrace me, you know, when I got to the squad. He realized, you know, that I was coming in to play, and, you know, he's one of the first ones who started helping me out, you know, helping me put me in the right positions to learn the plays. So I give him a lot of credit for that. But in his situation, you know, he just came to a good team, a very good team. So it's hard to, you know, it's a playoff team. So as a rookie, it's hard to get out there on the court. But TJ, he has a lot of potential. You know, he's bouncy. He can stretch the floor. And I think he has a bright future.
Do you ever feel like you were teaching him a lot about, you know, like more of a post game? I know you're more of a bruising guy, and he's more of a stretchy guy with a little bounce. Do you ever feel like there was a little yin and yang to you teaching him a little about the game there?
Yeah, I think so. I think he watched me, just watched me bang and realized, you know, how physical it was, you know, down low. But TJ could be physical also. Whatever you need him to be, he could do it. But I definitely think he, you know, sat on the bench and watched and learned a little, which is great for him.
That's how it's got to be as a rookie. This is a harder question to ask because I don't actually play the sport, but there's a lot of talk, you know, as the NBA transitions to this three-point era where, you know, Harden's taking 15 a game and Steph's taking 12 a game. Where guys without a three-point shot necessarily get the game, quote-unquote, passes them by. And you're definitely more of an inside player than outside, and you definitely have added more of an outside game as your career went along, like most guys do. But do you feel like that's a thing that happens, the game passes guys by, or do you feel like there's almost more room now to be a good inside player as guys come into the league and don't know how to defend it as well?
Well, teams are definitely looking for that stretch four or five more these days. I think, you know, guys like me, the bruisers, you know, like the defensive pest, I think, you know, we're starting to get overlooked, which I don't agree with. I think, you know, every team needs a guy like me that's going to go out there, play hard, and, you know, just bring energy and be that pest on the floor, you know. And, you know, occasionally I could, you know, knock down the three. I think, you know, teams are overlooking those type of guys now, and trying to get the stretch four. But that's what the NBA is transitioning to now. You know, you see the centers stepping out and shooting threes. You know, Brooke Lopez is shooting 10 three-pointers a game. So that's what it's transitioning to now.
Yeah, it's almost hard to watch, but then at the same time you have guys like Thad, who is like the apex of the role that you talk about, the really defensive bruiser kind of guy who can bang in the post, but he's also, you know, an excellent perimeter defender and stuff like that. But he's kind of the apex of what the non-stretchy guy can be, and he's proving that is a super, super valuable player because he's been so good for the Pacers the last 2 years.
Exactly. And I think, you know, people put too much – I think, you know, some of the GMs put too much emphasis on, you know, having a stretch guy nowadays, and guys like, you know, Thad, you know, get overlooked because they're not like a knock dead three-point shooter, and all the other attributes, you know, get overlooked. But, you know, if you look at Thad, you know, Thad is, you know, he's the glue to this team, you know. He's the X factor. How he plays determines, you know, how well the team does a lot of times. So I think a lot of times, you know, being a stretch four or five is, you know, it's overrated.
So I feel like you've had to answer this question a million times, but I feel like I have to ask you about it. Game four, you break out the hyper dunks. Reggie Miller's choking on him. Great stuff against LeBron. That was excellent. Is there a good story behind, you know, getting those shoes, the idea of those shoes? And do you still have those, or those got auctioned, correct?
Yeah, those got auctioned off.
Okay.
But it was no real story behind it. You know, I just wanted a cool pair of kicks. And I just thought for a couple of days, you know, I just thought about different legends in the Indiana Pacers uniform. And that image popped up in my head. And, you know, I just had my guy, Kitch Fredomis, cook them up.
Yeah, they were awesome. I mean, it just had to feel so badass wearing them in a game.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. The fans loved it.
Oh, yeah, I did too. It was really awesome. All right, man. Well, are you what? You're doing some analyst stuff now, is that correct? What's your role here with the Locked On Network exactly, so people know what you're doing besides rehabbing to get ready to play?
Yeah, just rehabbing right now. I'm doing, you know, a little podcast work, you know, here and there, probably like, you know, once a week. I'm on different podcasts. So that's what I'm up to right now.
All right, everybody, keep up with Trevor as he transitions into the next chapter of his career. Trevor, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
All right, so I hope you all enjoyed that. Had a great time having Trevor on the show. First time we've had a full featured segment of a player guest, the exclusive player guest. Hopefully we can do some of that stuff with players on the current team in the future, but that might seem a minute off. But it was cool to have him on last year and talk about all that stuff. But now we can transition to this fun weekend of games against the Mavs and Hornets. So quick break, and then we'll be back to talk Mavs and then Hornets. So the Mavs came in on Saturday for Basketball to Indiana. Cool court, hickory jerseys, everything was decked out, and really, the Pacers kind of had to win that game. I know that seems kind of dramatic for me, but like after getting smacked by the Sixers, Adam reacted, not how I would have, but appropriately still because of the circumstances. You know, that was really bad. Maybe they can't hang with the top teams in the East. I think that they can, but anyway, they needed to win against the Mavs, show everybody what they're made of again, and they did. 111.99 for those that couldn't keep up. And they looked pretty good the whole game. On the defensive end of the floor, Victor Oladipo started on Doncic and did a great, great job defending him. Doncic finished with only 8 points. I want to say I saw that it was only his second time under 10 points, maybe the whole season or like in a long time or something. I don't remember. He did technical foul out of the game with 2 techs, so that certainly helped limit that factor. But 0-5 from 3, 3-14 from the field also was a big factor there. So credit Victor Oladipo for playing such great defense on him. McMillan made a point to put him on there because he is such big size for a guard. Pacers side, they were able to get a lot of points through Miles Turner, who had 12, Darren Collison, who had 16, and then Tyreke Evans and Domantas Sabonis off the bench both did a superb job scoring the ball. Turner did it through more inside play. 4 of his 5 makes were inside the arc, which is good for him. That's not normally his thing. And his defense was pretty good in this game, although he only had to play half the game because they were winning by so much. And in Sabonis' case, the opposite was true, where he was just doing his thing, sinking everything. He finished with 16 and 11 and was a plus 22. 7 of 8 from the field, he was dominant. The Mavs' bigs had just no answers for the pick and roll that Sabonis was in. Their starting center, DeAndre Jordan, has been kind of a laughingstock in terms of his post-defense this year. It's been really, really horrible. And then off the bench, Dwight Powell and Dirk play the bigs. And Dwight Powell's okay at some basketball stuff, but defending the Domantas Sabonis pick and roll has determined to be not one of them. And another reason Sabonis is able to play so well is due to some improved play recently, and I'll sneak this in there, from Tyreke Evans. Tyreke Evans now, there's been 12 games, including the Hornets game, which I'll talk about sooner. Evans was also pretty good. But he was the leading scorer with 19 in this one, and that makes 9 or 10 out of the 12 games since Christmas where Tyreke's been at least okay and more so good in all of them. He's only been bad twice, Cavs and Raptors, and that's huge. If he can be good, and I talked to Nate McMillan after this Mavs game. I talked about Evans. I said it looks like he's been different since his injections. You know, what have you seen from him that you like? And they just said they're trying to get him the ball and make him be the main initiator for that bench unit. He's been good at making reads out of the pick and roll and stuff like that. They really trust the guy, and he did really well in this Mavs game. 7 of 11 from the field, 2 of 3 from deep on his way to 19 points, which was huge. The Mavs had no answer for such a large guard because their backup guards are Devin Harris and Jalen Brunson. And usually they had Ryan Brokoff play a little bit in there, but he's also pretty tiny. Normally they have J.J. Barea, also really tiny, so they really just had no one to guard him. No matter what the situation, especially when Doncic was done. So they just had no answer for Tyreke and Domas, and they just took over the game. And it was how the Pacers won. They just took over with the bench in there. Victor Oladipo, though, 4 for 15 from the field after 6 for 20 against Philly was concerning. 12 points, 8 rebounds and 6 assists is really nice, and he was a plus 10. He was still good, but his shooting was not, and it was concerning, and we'll talk more about that in the Hornets game. But this is the game where kind of like flags are popping up, like, is he really okay? You know, is stuff going on with him? But Hornets game kind of answered some of that questions. And then after the game, we were in a scrum, and I was actually going to ask Vic if he's injured, but someone else did before him, so that was very convenient. But he said, no, he's not. And I know he's going to say, no, he's not, no matter what. So, of course, I would take that with a grain of salt just as much as you would. But then he said that after he came back at first, there was some injury, like, get back into it. But the problem now is just that he's struggling to find rhythm in the new coverages he's getting. And I don't think he would say that he had injury problems at one point if he still was. You know, like, I don't think, like, I think if he was still injured, he wouldn't have added the addendum. So I think he was just in a slump. And this game was a part of that slump. And Bogey was in a slump too for a bit. He kind of put some stuff together in the Hornets game, but he was 2 for 10 for 9 points. So they really got a lot of their scoring and big runs from the bench in this game. McDermott supplied a lot of necessary spacing and added 9 points. He hit a 3, which at home for him never happens. And then at the end, they brought in the kids, but it didn't really matter that the kids were in because this game was hilarious, actually, for the last about 2.5-3 minutes. The Baker's Life crowd chanted, "We want Dirk, we want Dirk," for a healthy couple of minutes. And then they subbed in Dirk, and they ran a pick and pop, and I don't know if it was intentional or not. It's hard to tell, but the Pacers played some very shoddy defense on this pick and pop and left Dirk really open, and he bombed a 3 and he missed it. And then the next possession, they guarded it a little better and forced it out of his hands, and then he got it back and he missed it. And then Dorian Finney-Smith took a layup and a 3, and everybody booed him really hard when he shot. And then the last Mavs possession that Dirk was in for, they did a pick and pop, and TJ Leaf kind of contested him pretty hard, but Dirk just bombed it over Leaf, and the crowd was like, yeah, and then it didn't go in. But it was really fun to watch the crowd get into Dirk trying to score one more time, possibly his last for Jabanker's life. It was so much fun, and it was great that a game the Pacers played pretty well in on the defensive end ended with fun. They were able to limit a lot of the Mavs' creation opportunities. You know, like Harrison Barnes was 6 for 15. DeAndre is a play finisher. He did okay, but no one could create for themselves for the Mavs with Doncic struggling so much. So it was a pretty easy dispatch for them. They could turn that defense into good offense, and they walked out with a win. And they needed that after the Sixers game, and they needed the small amount of rest they got for the starters at the end of the game because it was a back-to-back, and they were playing the Hornets the next night. So let's take a break, and then we'll talk about that Hornets game from the next night. So Charlotte comes in, both teams on a back-to-back, and that usually just means yuck. And the Pacers played awesome. They played awesome 48-minute game. They let the Hornets have some runs here and there. You know, right at the start of the second, the Hornets put a dent in their lead. And then two times in the third, they kind of cut it down to like 5 or 8. But really, the Pacers just battled through and kept the lead for most of the game at a pretty healthy like 10. And they had no trouble with the Hornets. Kemba, 8 of 18. He had 23 points, but he was a minus 24 because he was doing okay scoring the ball, I guess. His shooting percentage, as I just said, wasn't great, but Darren Collison was cooking him on the other end of the floor. Can you believe that Darren Collison made Kemba look foolish? He only lost the scoring battle by 4 points. Collison had 19 on 8 of 14 shooting, but Kemba had 7 assists. Darren Collison had 9. Darren Collison only had 2 turnovers. Kemba had 3. Like DC was matching Kemba's production out there on the court. It was insane. And Kemba did it in 36 minutes. DC only did it in 30. So Collison had a very efficient and good game. It was a joy to watch him have such a nice game in this one. There was a sweet possession where Oladipo got a strip steal on one end, and then on the other end, Darren Collison ran this really long and thought out side pick and roll with Sabonis, and then took a hard dribble and then went into the paint and drew in like 3 defenders and flung it over to Turner in the corner, and Turner drilled the 3. It was fantastic. A lot of guys did a good job, but Collison really was the guy that I thought had a great game. But Turner, oh, I might have had the block of the year in this game, and we have to talk about it. The Hornets ran a pick and pop. Marvin Williams, Kemba Walker. Kemba came around a screen. Marvin Williams totally held Darren Collison. It was super legal. Who cares? Kemba passes to Marvin Williams. He shot fakes. Marvin gets Thad Young up in the air, so he drives to the rim. He's going to go up for the dunk, and Miles Turner just completely erased it. I mean, blocked it and then caught it and then kind of punched it forward to a teammate. Marvin Williams falls on the ground. Miles Turner lands and just runs. It was insane. It was like it was like impossible how good this block was. I think it's going to end up being the block of the year up to this point, at least. And I can't guess with stuff that hasn't happened yet, but it was insane. Turner, for all his efforts, did not end up with a double-double because of his points, but he was really fantastic in this game. He was actually 0-4 inside the three-point arc, but he was 3-5 from deep, all three coming in the first quarter. He finished with 9 points, 16 rebounds, including 3 offensive and 3 blocks. He was spectacular in this game. Bismack Biyombo did not really have an answer for him, both on the glass, and Bismack can't really chase him out beyond the arc. So he had a good game, or a good first quarter, I guess, with the three-point shooting, which was really good to see. And then the Hornets bench, which the Hornets killed them with that bench, ironically, the first time these two teams played in November. The Hornets bench just was not up to the task of meshing against the Pacers bench. Corey Joseph, his bench defense was excellent in this game. None of the bench guards for the Hornets were able to get much of anything going. Malik Monk and Tony Parker combined 6 of 14 shooting. And then Domantas Sabonis was, as usual, exceptional. 16 points, 8 rebounds, plus 18. And you know what's crazy? I'll dig up this stat. Sabonis had a good game. He shot 6 of 13. He was under 50%. That was his 8th game under 50% shooting on the whole season out of 44 games. He's just insanely efficient all the time. I have no idea how he's able to be like that. And then the kids got to play. But TJ Leaf, 8 minutes. TJ Leaf, I think that's almost 10 games straight for him of being in the rotation, and none of them have been so bad that you're like, oh man, you can't play this guy. Which is amazingly, that's a big step for him, because for so long with Leaf, it's been, we cannot play this guy. He just gets killed on the court. We can only play him 5 minutes at the end of at the start of the second quarter. Now he gives you some little minutes at the end of the first, early second, and the third. So that's good. He had 2 points in this game and 2 blocks, back-to-back possessions. So TJ Leaf may be a stable? I always get that wrong. In the rotation going forward. And then Tyreek, 14 points again on 6 of 10 shooting. So maybe that corner is being turned for him. Also 5 assists. But all right, here we go. Victor Oladipo. Oh, Bojan was 7 of 14 for 50% shooting, which for him is a big step up from Mark Benba. Victor Oladipo, 2 of 10 in the first half. He got to a point where in the 8.9 seconds group chat, Will Furr graciously brought up that he was being way too selfish. And at the time, it was halftime, I believe, when we were having this discussion, I was like, you know, I kind of want him to keep hunting his shot. I haven't really noticed anything so egregious, whatever. He came out in the third quarter, and Vic took some selfish shots. And you know, he was making it this time. And I offered a devil's advocate response to Will. I said, we need Vic to get out of the slump. I'm okay with him shooting through it. And in the third, he was making these shots. He finished the second half 6 of 10. He had one egregiously forced shot where he like did a pick and roll with Turner, and then nothing was there for him when he came around the screen, and then the pull-up elbow jumper wasn't there, and he kept driving, and nothing was there under the rim, and then he kept dribbling and went all the way over to the corner and took like a 20-foot long two from the corner, and he made it. But it was a ridiculous possession where he was just like looking to shoot at every single turn. But he shot 6 of 10, and I know the hunting was bad at first, but they were up a ton, and then he put the ball in the basket. He finished with 21 points, 7 assists, no turnovers. That's good. More points than shots, barely. But it's fine, and they need him to get on the right path. So I agree with Will. In the third quarter, the shot selection was whoa. But Fig finally put it together for a half, and I hope that gives him some confidence and momentum to continue to be a little better going forward. If he can really have a few more of these 20-point games, really cement his all-star case, which I know he's going to get it anyway, but I think Pacers people are less confident than people on the outside, which is kind of ironic. But they won the game. They smoked him 120-95. The Hornets just on a back-to-back and traveling. The Pacers not traveling. I think that honestly was the leg difference when it came down to it. And they really put it away in the fourth quarter. They won the fourth quarter by 13 of those 25 points. Over half of the deficit of the game came down to the end, and they had more legs. So great weekend for the Pacers. They escape it 2-0 after a tough loss last Thursday. 31-15 now. Pretty good record. They got Toronto on Wednesday. So we talked Toronto, me and Adam did. We already recorded it, but we'll post it tomorrow. Weekly show will come out tomorrow. There's only 2 games this week, so it was easy to postpone it. But thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed having Trevor Booker on the show. We'll try to get more fun guests, fun player guests like Trevor going forward. And then, yeah, tomorrow weekly show. I think I'll do Raptors something pregame and postgame. We might do 6 episodes this week just because we had a special occasion to do so. But, yes, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you tomorrow.